Welcome to the Should Bet More podcast presented by VSiN, the Sports Betting Network. Coming up on the show, John Legace. We'll do a little Major League Baseball the second part of the show. Haven't done much baseball this season, believe it or not, less than a week away. So we'll do baseball a little bit, but we will spend, obviously, the most of the show here and at least the opening portion on the NCAA tournament. React to Thursday, look ahead to Friday. And the games on Friday don't look great, at least on paper. You got three of the one seeds in action, you know, a couple two seeds, but as we know with this tournament, as we learned on Thursday, and recording this between the gap between the early and late games, so we'll see what happens with the later games. But a tournament where you thought maybe, you know, not going to be a lot of upsets, not going to be a lot of drama, especially early, and there nearly wasn't because High Point probably shouldn't have beaten Wisconsin. But Siena, what an incredible surprise to have drama in that game. And I never thought they were actually going to do it, but when you get up by 13 points, 13 is not 6 or 8 or 10. 13 is a pretty significant lead. And Duke was favored the whole time. Siena just ran out of offense. Would have been, I think, the most incredible upset in tournament history. I know Purdue a few years ago was 25-point favorites, and Virginia was less than that against UMBC, which is now 8 years ago, incredibly. This would have been just out of nowhere, a stunner. Siena couldn't get it done. Siena just ran out of offense. And at 65-61 with about 2 minutes to go, Siena had a three rim out. Duke gets the rebound, scores on the other end. If that three goes in, it's a one-point game, minute 30, minute 45 or so to go, and who knows, it's a one-point game. Anything can happen. Wouldn't happen. Siena had their looks at the end, and Duke survives. I think anybody, unless you had Duke futures, unless you're a Duke fan, you're just rooting with every fiber in your being for Siena to win that game. Would have been just an incredible upset, an incredible story. But Duke marches on, and we did get the upset, though, with High Point. And what a shot to get for High Point. It's 70-62. Just under five minutes or so left, 4 or 5 minutes left. He pulls up. There's plenty of time on the shot clock. It's not like this is the last 30 seconds, so you got to rush. He pulls up from about 10 feet past half court. He's basically on the logo and just fires it like it's, you know, a buzzer beater. It was such a strange shot considering the distance, considering the time on the shot clock. And he nailed it. That put it at 70-65. If he misses that, like I said, it was Siena Duke. If that goes in, 1 point game, minute and a half to go, different game. If he misses that, Wisconsin gets the rebound. They're up 8. Final few minutes, they're probably going to salt the game away. I know it's only one possession, but that just a wild shot considering the circumstances and considering what transpired after. It reminded me of the kid Sorrentine, which is about 20 years ago now, maybe even 21 years ago. Was that 2005? Vermont beat Syracuse, and he just hit it, the famous Gus Johnson call. He hit it from the parking lot. And, wow, what an incredible shot. And High Point, the coach afterwards said, you know what, enough with the disrespect. We won our games. Miami, Ohio won our games. These teams won't schedule us. And maybe there is something to that. So good for the little guy. Miami, Ohio gets it done with the win. And obviously, High Point pulls off the upset, 10.5-point dog. So we got some upsets early here. Miami, Ohio, I don't really count that as part of the tournament. They won on Wednesday night, and they got bet down. So when you keep in mind, hey, trendy dog, everyone likes them too much. Miami, Ohio got up to as high as 10. That got down to 6.5. And they won the game and won it outright. So keep in mind with that stuff, oh, man, it's too trendy. Too many people are on it. You can outsmart yourself with that line of thinking. So we'll see here what the games on Friday present. Start with Santa Clara, Kentucky. Not a bad game. Santa Clara playing 9 a.m. body clock for them because it's a West Coast team here playing 12:15 Eastern. Akron, a very trendy underdog. That is one I like. Akron plus the points. They have a very good offense. Texas Tech, you figure at some point here, they've shot the three extremely well without Toppin. Maybe that regresses. Akron, believe it or not, never won a tournament game. And you think of Akron, they're in this tournament a lot. They're in the conference title game a lot. They're a real powerhouse in the MAC. Had a good team this year, even though Miami, Ohio got all the attention. Akron was a good 30 spots better in KenPom and won the conference championship. We'll see here. They've never won a game, which surprised me because, again, they're around this tournament a lot. I do like Akron getting the 7.5. Lean towards Santa Clara getting the points on Friday as well. My best bet, probably my favorite bet of all these, Arizona's laying 30.5 to LIU. LIU likes to run. LIU likes to like live at the rim, and they turn the ball over. They have just basically every statistical or style red flag for an underdog. You want to play slow. You want to win with shot making. You don't want to go toe-to-toe and try to basically blow fastballs by Arizona here. So I think LIU is playing right into Arizona's hands. Arizona's a 30.5-point favorite. The team total is 90.5. I would expect Arizona to win, cover, go over. I would not be surprised if they covered that 30.5 first half. So it's a lot of points. I mean, you could just come out half asleep and win the game by 20, 26 points. I mean, obviously, we know nothing is a lock, but I do like Arizona minus the 30. I just think stylistically, LIU, that's not a good matchup. That's not how you want to play as an underdog. Wright State getting 18.5 against Virginia would lean towards taking Wright State plus the points there. Virginia, much better offensively than they've been in past, dominant teams here, but that's still a lot of points here. Wright State, not a bad team. No real feel for Iowa State, laying 24.5 to Tennessee State. Hofstra has gotten bet up here, 11.5-point dogs now against Bama. We'll see if they can be competitive. And I've talked about them in past shows. Kind of rooting for them. Haven't been to the tournament in forever. A lot of people thought they should have made it 2006. They beat George Mason head-to-head back when they were in the same conference. Then in 2020, they finally make the tournament, and that year Mason made the Final Four in 2006. 2020, Hofstra, they win the conference tournament. Finally, we're going back to the tournament. First time in 20 years. COVID happens the next day, and everything falls apart. So Hofstra would be a fun sentimental favorite here. And who knows? Bama may be a little cold from the line with the suspension. Hofstra was the best team in that conference by Ken Palm all year. Hofstra's got some boxes they do check here. I think they could keep that game close. I worry Bama. I forget who they played Bama last. Was it last year or the year before? We thought, all right, maybe this team could compete, and they just out-athlete and out-shoot these lesser teams, but this is not the vintage version of Bama this season. Utah State, Villanova lean towards Utah State. Really good offense, but don't trust them. Sometimes these finesse offenses, when they go against the power teams, they just get bumped off their spots and their screening and their ball motion, all that stuff. It's just tougher when you've got guys that are bigger and stronger than your guys. And Utah State, a finesse team here. They've had some really impressive performances. They have some games where they get absolutely blown out, so they're a hard team to figure out. But on the other hand, Villanova has not beaten a tournament team in forever. Wisconsin back in non-conference playing a game that went to overtime. So take your pick there. Tennessee, a big favorite, 11.5 over Miami of Ohio. I would imagine Tennessee's a pretty popular survivor play on Friday because you can use them, get rid of them. They'll play the three seed you think in the next round, and you just kind of move on here. That'll be a popular one on Friday, I would imagine. Tennessee will maul them on the glass. I think it's a bad matchup for Miami of Ohio. I don't love laying 11.5, but I don't know that Miami is live here. It'd be fun to see that team, keep this going, and who knows, make a run at the Sweet 16, but they will have their hands full with Tennessee. Would probably lean towards laying it, not going to bet it. Iowa-Clemson, talked about that game on Monday. Grinder. Iowa probably wins because Sturts will be the best player and he'll make enough shots, but 128.5, I would still go under. That's gone under. That's gone down 3 points since we talked about that on Monday's show. Just two teams that can play slow, be tough to watch on offense. That might be 23-20 at the half or something really, really ugly. I could see that being an ugly game. Northern Iowa has come down against St. John's. I'm not surprised. They play slow. They play good defense. All things you've heard all week. A very trendy underdog pick here is this Northern Iowa team. And I understand it. I think all of those things are true. Best opponent's three-point defense in the country. Top 25 KenPom defense in the country. Really slow pace. St. John's can be a little spotty offensively, especially in the half court. And I think Northern Iowa can slow them down. You always worry about just getting bullied, out-athleted, so to speak, if you're Northern Iowa. But taking the points there still makes some sense. I would still take it before I lay it, even though you're getting the worst of the number. And then UCF plus 5.5 against UCLA. UCLA is banged up. I don't know how healthy they're going to be. And UCF can at least shoot the three ball, 48%. 48th in the country, 36.2% from three for UCF. UCLA not played well away from home. I like UCF getting the points there. The other two, Purdue against Queens, 25.5, no interest. Florida, 35.5 against Prairie View. I mean, I guess Florida first half, if anything, just because after they're showing in the SEC tournament, you figure Golden has them fired up to come out and beat Prairie View by a million points. I guess they could. But I remember last year liking Florida in that first round matchup, and they were laying like 29 or something. Got up by 35 or 40 and took their foot off the gas and didn't cover. It was looking like the best bet you could ever make the first 15 or so minutes of the half. That game stuck in my head, so nothing there, and nothing on Kansas. Cal Baptist, Kansas is a very hard team to predict. Miami and Missouri. Miami now laying 2.5. Keep in mind this game is in St. Louis, so a quasi-home game for Missouri. Miami's a little better than Missouri, but I'm surprised this is up to 2.5 because of the home court from Missouri. I would lean towards probably taking the points there. If anything, that'll be the final game on Friday night. So, yeah, the volume of games, just the feel of having March Madness, and what is better than this tournament? I mean, it's really just so good. But you don't look on paper. There's not a lot of games where you look and say, oh, got to watch that game or got to watch this game. I guess if you could only watch one game tomorrow, and who's only going to watch one game? You're going to watch all these games, of course. If one game you're most excited for tomorrow, St. John's, Northern Iowa. Now, I wouldn't trust Hofstra enough to say, all right, got to circle the calendar, 3:15 Eastern to watch that. A lot of these games, 30-point spreads, you know, Virginia, Wright State, no. Santa Clara, Kentucky, not a bad game. So we'll see. We'll see if we get another stunner on Friday. But the picks for me, just to recap, I like UCF plus 5.5. I still like Northern Iowa plus 9.5. I think I gave those out on Monday at Better Numbers. So hopefully you got those in. Under on Clemson, Iowa gave out the other day, would still lean towards the under, and I do like Iowa to win. Lean Tennessee minus the points. I really like Arizona. My best bet, my favorite one of all these is Arizona minus the 30.5. I think Arizona wins the game by 40 or 45 points. With the caveat, it's a lot of points. They could get bored. They could take their foot off the gas. That's a horrible matchup for LIU. So LIU's going to, I think, get run out of that gym. That's Friday, 1:30 Eastern. And then I do like Akron, which is another game that's come down here, getting 7.5 against Texas Tech. But let's switch gears. Let's talk a little baseball. John Legesa is the best in the business. He is next. This Should Bet More Podcast. All right, we are back. Should Have Bet More Podcast. Let's talk a little baseball. He is a titan in the industry. I will just put it simply. You should read everything he writes. You should listen to everything he records. He will make you smarter and he will make you money. And he joins us now. John Legesa, Corked Stats Podcast. You can find him a number of different places. Substack, Baseball Writer of the Year in Fantasy. John, what's going on, man? Thanks for coming on. Good to see you. Excited for baseball. How's everything?
You got me blushing already. A little early for that. I would have kept the glazing off air, but yeah, too nice, man. But yeah, it's our time. We were just talking about that. Those the baseball heads. You know, we're at the four right now. I'm finally popular.
Absolutely. We'll get into a bunch long shots, futures. You know, some fantasy stuff. I'll give you the floor. The team you have the most conviction on of the 30 teams, to the good or the bad, is who?
Yeah, it's the bad, and it's the Cardinals and the Diamondbacks. So as futures markets are popping up and people are talking about them, I'm just kind of, you know, you're shopping around. There's so many different options now. It's like a damn Cheesecake Factory. I stumbled on worst record, and I had never really bet worst record. I'm usually not big on laying money out there for 6 months, but, you know, for some of the odds, it's worth looking at. And I couldn't believe this. I wonder what you thought about this, because maybe I'm misplaced. And I think this happens in a lot of futures markets. People marry themselves to the one kind of true, right, the one ring of power, the one right answer. So in this one, it's the Rockies. Yes, the Rockies are terrible. We all know they're terrible. Would you believe they're minus 400 to have the worst record, which is, again, you just should not be paying that for a six-month bet with so much uncertainty. That's crazy. Like, it's crazy. Baseball's way too variant for that. But where I was going in the shopping was the Diamondbacks are at 28-1. I think they're terrible. I'm sorry, the Cardinals are 28-1. The Diamondbacks are 150-1. The Cardinals, I think, are as bad as the next layer of teams, right? So again, the Rockies minus 400, not interested. The next layer, however, the White Sox plus 750, the Nats are there. I think the White Sox are significantly better than the Cardinals. That staff is a joke. The offense does not have a single star. And they just shipped off not only the leadoff hitter Donovan, but also Helsley was slamming the door. This team is built on platoon hitters and like retreads and some quad A guys. I couldn't believe that was one of my favorite prices, the Cardinals. I mean, I love a $1.50 to 1.2 for the Diamondbacks, but they're obviously a little bit better reflected in the price.
Since you brought them up, I heard you a lot last summer talking about the Rockies saying, you know what, if they just hired me or any analytics guy, they would improve because their pitchers don't throw their best pitches. They're just behind the times, basically, in terms of analytics. They bring in Dee Podesta, who's a known analytics guy. I think that was Jonah Hill in Moneyball.
Yeah.
They bring in Quintana. They bring in Lorenzen. They bring in Sagano, might have a tough time in course, but you get the idea. They bring in some floor raisers, at least respectable major leaguers. Now, we might not have the opportunity to fade Santazella and bet yes run first inning if team totals over, so that's disappointing. But they might be, I don't know, better is a relative term because they were just obviously historically bad last year. But you see the Rockies, I actually bet them over 54.5 just because that's still, man, a shit ton of losses. What's your thoughts on Colorado? Are they incrementally better in your mind?
Yeah, yes. Yes, and that's part of a not messing with a minus 400, which is just crazy. That's a crazy number. That's a crazy number for a team that's trying to win, right? This is not like locked up and they've sold off all their pieces and they've kind of telegraphed it. Right now, they're going to try and win. I'd also say if they get out of the box hot, like let's say they win, what would be hot for the Rockies is winning like 4 out of the first 10, right? So if they win 4 out of the first 10, people might be shocked, you know, and that number could change. So again, with futures, you want to keep your eye on the price. I'm curious now. I mean, a lot of these guys are still kind of bums. Here's my issue with the way they built the staff. So, all right, I'll give you that. They at least brought in guys that can get ground balls, right? So, Quintana, known ground baller. Sagano can keep the ball down. Even Lorenzen will keep the ball down at times. So, I think that's going to help. My beef has been they just don't develop or target swing and miss. And I feel like everybody knows Coors is the toughest place to pitch. I think for our prop bettors out there, maybe any new people, yeah, home runs are a thing there. But you're much more worried about home runs in Dodger Stadium or Cincinnati than you are in Colorado. Colorado is the BABIP heaven, you know, like that's the place. So that's a thing you're worried about, which so to me, well, right, the next logical progression is, well, we should be trying to avoid contact. If you're telling me batting average on balls in play is going to spike in Coors, I'd be saying, well, how do we avoid that? It'd be looking to generate whiffs, and there's just literally just none of that. Lorenzen was the only guy on the staff with a 20% K rate last year, which is not any good. Not a single guy had a 15% K minus BB, which again, these are like replacement level stats. We want 20 or better. 15 is when you're out of the league. They don't have anybody that does it, so they're probably still going to stick.
Yeah, and I'm probably spending too much time on the Rockies, but I live in Connecticut, and Charlie Condon plays for the Hartford Yard Goats, the Double-A team, third pick in the draft a couple years ago. Once he gets to Coors, that might be a good sleeper for Rookie of the Year. But let's go to the top. The Dodgers, 103.5 at FanDuel. I could only look to the under. I think they'll load manage. I think they'll pace themselves for the postseason. Roberts basically admitted that last year. Now, I know they got guys in reserve. River Ryan, underrated. I mean, they got just an embarrassment of riches. But Freeman's going to be 37 before the end of the season. Betts is going to be 34. Probably not a desire to go out and win 104, 105 games, which is just a crap ton of games. Do you have any thought on the Dodgers? Is it inevitable they win it all? And what are your thoughts here in terms of their win total?
Well, win it all is definitely not inevitable. It should, and that's why that price for a World Series is patently insane, right? That's just, it's wrong. You should not do that.
Too random.
I feel like the playoff appearance is inevitable. And it's because of what you mentioned, and that's why, you know, you're so good at this. If people, like, there's a whole wave of casual baseball understanders that know, like, the Dodgers are awesome without a single concept of just how good the farm system is and all the backups, right? We talk about pitching, and you understand how critical top flight pitching is. And yeah, Snell, whatever. They're like, dude, we'll see you in May. You come back in June. I don't know, River Ryan is going to be fine. You mentioned that name. A lot of people don't know who that is. He's going to pitch. They're going to be shocked at how good he was. They also had Gavin Stone. I think he's going to be off to a slow start. He had an arm thing. But also, it's Robleski, right? So there's multiple guys. They're talking about Sasaki, right? They had the liberty to bring this guy over, have him be terrible, move him to the bullpen. They could, like, play around with his workload. There is a top side where he's an excellent starter, but there's also a place where you mentioned also these injuries could pop up. The Dodgers have a lot of injury track record on this team and a lot of ages that start with a 3. In fact, well, and Tucker is 29, So he's going to be making that list soon. Shohei, Mookie, Freeman, Will Smith, Max Muncy, Teoscar are all in their 30s, and most of those names are 33 or older.
Right.
So I hate putting injury stuff into the universe, but we all understand the aging curve. And I think that's where the Dodgers get smoked, if it happens, is not to say playing with their food, but because they don't feel this pressure right out of the box, maybe they're closer to 500 after 30 games than people thought possible. And then again, this number, all these playoff Dodger numbers are going to be significantly better than they are right now.
Our Yankees did not do much in the offseason. You always have to worry, Judge, can he play? Especially, he's getting a little older now. He's still great. He's still the best hitter in baseball. But can he play 150, 155 games? He's been known to miss games. The pitching should be really good. This guy, LaRange, throws the ball 102 miles an hour. What are your thoughts here, Yankees? Low 90s in terms of the win total.
It's so funny. It's like, dude, I'm a dyed-in-the-wool, like, lifetime, lifelong Yankee fan. And the first thing that I think when I hear that name is, I'm like, man, I hate the Yankees. I really hate the Yankees. I just hate them. I hate them. You know, and my hate has changed. You know, I used to hate the bandwagon fans. Then I hated them trying to buy everything. Not to say you shouldn't spend. You should spend, but you should spend smart, right? And make plus EV decisions, the same kind of stuff we advise to our readers and followers and stuff. I don't feel like the Yankees do that very well. I am with you. I think they've done a very good job of developing pitching. And now, like, Schlittler looks like he's a legit arm. Will Warren is probably a lot better than I think people have give him credit for. Ryan Weathers looks fantastic this spring, throwing gas. Yankees look like they've maybe helped him level up. Same for Louis Hill. If they could just nip the command and control in the bud. You're talking about a lot of really good starters. Yankees are going to be heavy favorites almost every day. However, there's fragility in the starting rotation. And that lineup, I don't think, is very good. We saw that, man, shame on me, if it was last year or the year before, where when Judge is missing, even for like a day or a week, all of a sudden the whole thing kind of falls apart. The same to be said for, I mean, listen, Jazz, just because he finally got you plate appearances, the way he plays, balls to the wall, 150 miles an hour all the time, Yankees are very fragile, man. They're very fragile. And I wouldn't be putting any, like, future, long-term stuff in them at all. I do think they'll look to bolster if there are holes. Come the All-Star break, you know, the fans here will riot. But I'm not, like, bullish on them the way I think maybe about Boston, who has, like you mentioned, with the Dodgers and the reserves. So, and the Orioles, same thing. The Orioles have the trade chips to bring in more pieces. I think the Yankees, what you see is what you get. I mean, Cole is on the back burner, but what you see is what you get. And I don't think it's enough.
I like the Orioles. I bet the Orioles 5-1 to win the division just because Rodgers
really?
Was great last year.
Good number.
I don't know that he can do what he did last year. I mean, that was just ridiculous. But Kyle Bradish back, you know, Bassett's an innings eater. Baz, you get him away from the minor league ballpark, and I just think they're going to hit. You add Alonso and Ward to that lineup. Some of those guys took a step back last year.
That.
Where do you stand on Baltimore? They're a little bit of a buzz team here.
Yeah, love that. I think one thing you didn't mention would be something I'm always focused on. I hope I'm not hyper-focused on it, but I like to find the teams that get the most out of their pitchers. So I've been very public about taking this L because I really like Kyle Stowers, who turns out he looks like he's a good ball player. But I was laughing outwardly at Baltimore for bringing in Trevor Rogers. And they look like they've made the necessary tweaks that he looks like. I mean, he looked like an ace, but we all know not to overreact to half a season. Sometimes anybody could be fantastic for 12 or 15 starts or whatever. But now that full offseason, he's coming out and picked up right where he left off. They are over the moon about him. They immediately named him the opening day starter. He looks like he's going to be a problem every 5 days, right? This is one of those guys. We've seen the top-end talent with the Marlins. It was a little bit of command and control. It was a little bit of health. Well, if that's behind him, and now, you know, right, we talk about pitching trajectory. He looks like he's a frontline starter. So when we talk about Baltimore, right, I think we need to be talking about them through that lens. You mentioned depth also, which is looking like it's in place. Bradish looks like he's a potential frontline guy. Shane Boz could be a potential frontline guy. You know, the back end may be a little shaky like Kramer and such, but I also think they have the tools to bring in somebody. You know, they're sitting on a guy like Keston Hurstad, for example, former first rounder that there are absolutely at least a dozen teams that would love to get their paws on this guy. There's at least 15 GMs that know you don't discard a former, what, third overall pick or whatever this guy was, superstar prospect. But when Baltimore brought him in, we knew there was a logjam, and it's easy to forget about these guys. He could bring in the starter that Baltimore needs, so I'm really high. I think, dude, you nailed it, and I think that price is fantastic. Is it still available? Probably not.
It's only ticked down a little bit. I think it was plus 470 or so in that range. Remember, you got the Yankees. Yankees are going to be overpriced. The Blue Jays were, and I still don't know how, I don't know if you ever rewatched that Game 7 of the World Series, how that ball got caught in the ninth inning with the bases loaded, everything that happened in that Game 7 of the World Series. So the Blue Jays were a coin flip.
Oh, that tag up was bad, too. My heart broke for them on that one.
Yep, the secondary lead for Kiner Falefa. So, yeah,
it's he's a tough good division. Base runner
the Red
too.
Sox are really good. He is.
Good base runner, and it goes to show you, right, you mess on those fundamentals. And again, this should be a lesson for all bettors also. You could put yourself in a great situation to win, and it just doesn't get there, and you can't beat yourself up. If you had Toronto, I don't think you made a bad bet there.
Futures. Let's start with pitchers, guys to lead the league in either wins, strikeouts, guys you just think are generally underrated. I'll give you the floor. Take it whatever direction you want to go in terms of pitchers you like.
Okay, so pitchers, just I think right off the bat, I'm very weary of any kind of favorites. And it's very similar to the argument we're making for the or against the Dodgers, but you know, with the case of the Dodgers, pitchers get injured all the time. And the problem is, unlike hitters where an injury could cost you 7 or 10 days and it might not affect something like a year-long award, pitcher injuries are generally not 10 days, and then they usually require ramp-up. So when you bake in the higher probability for injury and then the duration of injury with, again, ramp-up and then skill when it comes back, I don't touch the top of the board on any of these. I'm not interested in any of that stuff. You can bet that the only time I play these markets or when, like I mentioned before, if the beginning of the season doesn't go as planned, MLB is very hard to predict. And then maybe jumping in on something we think could swing in our direction. So I think nobody hurt and nobody at the top of the board. Then I think it's a per inning basis. I like to look at strikeouts, right? We're strikeout guys. So we want guys that can go innings. Got to probably be a good team, right? Because you want them out there competitive throughout. And, you know, durable, right? So not hurt, good team, durable, per inning basis. So guys that I think check that box, I think Logan Gilbert checks that box. Right now I see a 45-1 for him to lead the league in strikeouts. I mean, he was absurd last year on a per inning basis. And if he could get past the injury, because he did have an injury last year. Now, granted, he's hurt right now. He had a 32% strikeout rate, 27 KBB, nearly 16 swing strike rate. That's like a half a tick behind Tarik Skubal. So Gilbert, I don't think he's properly priced. Chris Sale, 20-1, as good as anybody. He's back. Velo is good. He's healthy. His injury was a rib and not a shoulder. He should be good for all the innings. He's also old as dirt in MLB terms. They're looking to win. They're not going to preserve, right? That's something we want to think about. Are they going to preserve these guys? Yeah, I would love to say, oh, Chase Burns, you know, he's awesome. Have you ever seen this guy pitch? Dude, what are the chances they're going to get a rookie or any rookie the innings and the workload and the stress load that it takes to get there? So I'm off. Even like Yesavage already, we're seeing the Blue Jays talk about managing innings. So I wouldn't go there, right? Youngsters are probably included. I'm probably not including most rookies. Anyone else to get out there? My long shot, I've been bumping Mizorowski. I think Jake Mizorowski's got, he not only has goods, he really checks out all the nerdy kind of diagnostic stuff. Velo and extension with movement and sequencing and stuff. Miz has got great stuff. Milwaukee's done a good job of pitching development too. So he's a favorite long shot of mine.
Is this for most strikeouts or most wins? Are you?
Yeah, all most strikeouts. Man, wins, I got to be honest. Maybe fantasy has soured me on this, my man. I can't do it. It's killing me. They're so hard to get. Wins are so hard to get because you're betting on so many different things. And it shows in the win market. On a specific day, right? Take Tarik Skubal against bad team. The Tigers could be a minus 330 favorite to win the game. Tarik Skubal is going to be like minus 110 to get a win, minus 160 to get a win, with good reason, because of not only the variance, but bullpens and stuff. So not to, I hate to be too wet of a blanket, but there are certain markets that just, they just rub me the wrong way. Wins are a little too hard to predict. Strikeouts, I think we know we're going to get those on a per inning basis. Wins, look at Skeens. Skeens put up a Cy Young caliber season. He had just a handful of wins, so case in point.
I made one wins leader bet last year, 1-for-1. Max Fried, 35-to-1. It was sweet. It was
great
really
job.
Good. It was
he's
nice.
A perfect example. Perfect example of a guy to get you there. I like the contact profile plus the contextual environment. Really, dude. I mean, your future stuff is very sharp. That was a good call.
And there's moving parts with it too. Like you want a good bullpen. You want enough. You want a team that can score for him. You want it to be a guy that, you know, gets leash and will pitch into the sixth or seventh inning. So when he leaves sixth or seventh and it's 2-2 and they score a couple runs, he gets the win. But I'll be chasing that high for a while.
I had Spencer Schwellenbach, because coming into the season, and a lot of people don't think about doing this, you got to add minor league innings because they count. He was over 200 innings and it was the Braves. They were going to bounce back. And I was like, he was 65 or 85-to-1 or something cool. And that, it just goes to show you, you know, you got to beat yourself up a little bit, but it's also to remind ourselves how hard it is to predict and how pitching injuries, like I was mentioning, could just derail everything. So as much as we love Skubal, you can't lay juice to win something like a Cy Young. That's crazy.
How about hitters you think are underrated, whether lead the league in home runs, MVP, awards, offensive players here you're looking at in terms of fantasy sleepers or otherwise?
Oh, okay. Well, fantasy sleepers, because those have just been on the top of my mind. Wyatt Langford, I think, could make a monster run. And he's even probably a fun long shot for an MVP somewhere. The MVP markets, we didn't mention them. They're another. They're like locked out with Judge and Ohtani.
It's tough.
Yeah, you use the word Titan for me. Not quite. Those are, they're just almost impossible, and you're pretty much betting on injury. So, like, MVP is a little, but a guy like Langford can really do everything. All the skill, all the, you know, pedigree. I had a long shot home run play that I was in love with because, you know, I do all the analytical fantasy stuff. And one of the things that we've learned that really matters with home runs is the ability to pull the ball and pull the ball in the air, right? So as stats get better, we have to be careful not to misuse stats. But for all the new stats, every once in a while, one or two will kind of creep into the consciousness. You know what I'm saying? And air pull is definitely, for me at least, is one of those. And I think the math really bears itself out. So I like to look for a couple things when we're doing home runs. So I like to look for guys that elevate in pull. We also love barrels. Of course, everybody loves barrels. But I like to look for guys that ran cold on their homer to barrel ratio, right? So this is a stat we don't hear. I mean, I don't want to say it's not a stat because I just quoted it and I don't want to ever want to be like, I made it up, but it's not something that we hear a lot about. You know, guys that, again, had a ton of barrels, right? But didn't get the home runs that maybe they should have. So I'm going to bring up Sal Perez. So Sal Perez checks all those boxes. Again, nobody's interested in him. He's old as dirt. He's 150-to-1 to lead the league in homers. And to me, again, we can't, you know, I can't promise you what's going to happen. Though I'm curious of your opinion or how you think prediction markets are going to shake out. Because I can't help but think to myself, if we can get our hands on a Sal Perez ticket or any good futures ticket, are we going to be getting really great offers in prediction markets where a trader like myself might play a bunch of volume where I might be able to make like really good percentage points without ever getting the bet home? So take a look at Perez last year. 640 PAs. Now I know catching is scary, but they start backups behind him. It was Fermin. I don't even know if he's back. But the point is he's the DH when he's not starting behind the plate. So you need plate appearances to get you the volume. He had 30 bombs. I know you say, like, 30 bombs. What chance does he have of getting all the way to the finish line? And it's, believe it or not, it's actually pretty good because Perez is an above-average zone contact rate. So his zone contact was up near 87. He has a really high fly ball rate. That was at 46 last year. Constantly pulling, that was near 48. His air pull, right, he's pulled his elevated pulled batted ball events was 23%, which is like elite, elite. He also had 70 barrels. Yo, 70 barrels to only get 30 home runs puts you at a 43% conversion rate. The league average is like 55. So just with a simple pendulum swing, right? Simple math. We put the same inputs back into the machine and look for another run out. Sal Perez could have had 40 home runs. He could have had 50 home runs. Let me ask you a question. Do you know how many barrels Cal Raleigh had? For example, right? Cal Raleigh, 60 bombs. Do you know how many barrels he had? Without looking.
I don't.
It's 80.
Oh, I was going to, yeah, I was probably going to guess.
Okay,
it's interesting.
80
wow.
barrels, Cal Raleigh, 60 home runs.
That's incredible.
Sal Perez had 70 bombs, 10 fewer barrels, and 30 fewer home runs.
What do you attribute that to?
It just happens, my man. It just happens. Because it's not like, you know, Perez just didn't, you sometimes you just don't get it out. It could be wind, it could be weather, it could be ballpark. Also, breaking news, right? They move the wall in,
right,
in left center, in KC. Now, again, sometimes analysis, it seems so dumb. And I swear, my best ideas are easily the stupidest. Go look at, right, like you mentioned, because of course you're sharp, and you immediately went to like, what, why? Between Vinny P, my boy Pasquatch, and Sally P, they had so many balls. You know, because if you just go to Savant and go on a player page, you could see all the batted balls, the ones that landed for hits. You can't believe how many were doubles in that area where they brought in the fence. So I think Kansas City has correctly identified how their ballpark was suppressing power for two of their better hitters. And yo, it's just crazy because Perez could have had 60 home runs with all his calculations. There were guys that do that. Right? Again, you know, Raleigh is the example. You know, Raleigh's conversion rate was crazy last year. Raleigh had a 75% conversion rate. Is he going to repeat that? Probably not. So I'd like Perez to go over Raleigh. I mean, I wonder if we can find a head-to-head home run market. Give me Perez over Cal Raleigh.
My next like natural thought would be, would you play Cal Raleigh under home runs with that in mind?
Yeah, probably. Although the thing is, Raleigh is also he's a good case in point of why those guys are so effective, right? Because he checks a lot of the same boxes, although his zone contact is not as good. Cal Raleigh also chases, but he's another one of these very extreme examples of 58 fly ball, 56 pull, 32 air pull. So I'd only be under because the number is so high. But yeah, I don't think he repeats because I think we automatically attribute the home run itself is the data point that is predictive, where I don't think it's the strongest input.
What would you tell if someone wanted to learn from you? If you had like, if you had a protege and you were just like, teach me how to do what you do, teach me how to analyze the data. What are your go-to sites? What do you look for? What would be just the 60-second or 90-second brief tutorial you would give someone how to train themselves on learning these stats and what matters and what doesn't?
Man, you made this too easy for me and it's going to get shameless. So you may want to cover your ears, but it's my Substack because I was that person. So I built the tools and the data sets in a way that can be used to help a person like myself. You know, baseball information is out there. It's free. So it's just a matter of how can you harness it? 15 games every day. You better be fast at understanding formatting. And that's why, you know, again, that's also why it's had some success. But I love my Substack. You check it out on Twitter. And again, there's free samples to give you an idea of, you need to have all this information templated, daily, formatted in a way that you could understand it, digest it, and then apply it. Because if you are, and listen, I love Fangraphs. We should support them. I love Baseball Savant. We should support them. But they're not built for us. They're not made for us. They're made for people that can saunter and take their time and can flip back and forth. Well, I created a way that you don't need 4,000 Chrome tabs open. Because, again, I've listened to your work, and it shows in the way that you and I speak to each other. Your first thing is a question. Well, you need to have the data to go answer that question. If you have to now go into Google and search and you don't know where to find it, and does it have the split you're looking for? Right? So where do I find this stuff? I built it, and it's gotten success for, I think, for that reason, because there are people now that are focused on props and betting, and we're thinking about these new numbers. And hello, can you even find it? Do you know where to find formatted homer to barrel rates? Like, dude, if you can't find it right there, I saved you to $2 a week. You know, that's time is worth it, you know?
You get the podcast, you get everything, and again, not to be
sorry
too shameless,
to chill. That was gross of me. I'm gonna shower after this.
It's as someone who's a customer myself, it is money. If you're even gonna bet 1 or 2 days a week, it is well worth it. So this baseball season, where can we find you? You'll be doing the podcast every day again still?
Yeah, the podcast is every day. You're gonna look for me out on Twitter. I'm on Substack. I've even been doing stuff on Instagram. Again, my Twitter handle will kind of streamline you and all that. But I'll be writing at The Athletic for the fantasy heads out there. And then just doing my thing. You know, I'm really, really, really looking forward to taking advantage of using the model in prediction markets. Because for somebody like myself, I'm old and married with kids. I don't necessarily want to stay up and sweat all these games all the time. And again, I want to get back to work. So if I can, and I have trading background, if we can all get these closing line value numbers and actually turn them into money now, instead of needing the sample to let the CLV play out while we're risking a bank account. So like, we're talking about just cash it, bank it, move on. So man, if we can make those, you know, listen, go do the math what it compounding 3% every day looks like. So if we can make that kind of noise with the model in the market, my man, we're going to be doing pretty well. And so that's what I'm focused on.
And you avoid having under 4.5 in the first five, and it's 2-0 in the bottom of the fifth, and you get a walk, you get an error, and a 3-run homer.
Variance. You understand it. Right, what would I tell the protege? Be easy. Don't bet live money first. If you're new, don't listen to all this garbage about, hey, you can't make money and it's impossible. It's not. Be smart. Have a process. I like to bet with paper, with pencils first. Show that your process works over 2 weeks. Can you show me that you're profitable over 2 weeks? Then put money in your account. Think about how many people, if they just did that, would have saved themselves 50 bankrolls. And that's how you learn. Don't be afraid of betting. This anti-betting propaganda is trash. If you think betting is bad, wait till you find out what the stock market is and what interest rates do. So, like, listen, people, be smart and follow guys like us.
All right, last one. Do you think ABS, the ball strike system, is this going to help? Are you in favor of it? I've noticed in spring training, man, even on the replay, you almost gain more respect for these umpires, even though I know, look, there's bad apples and there's guys that are bad. You can see the strike zone, you can see the ball, and I still can't tell if it's a ball or a strike. It's that microscopic. I don't know if people are ready for strike three, game's over. Oh, let's go to review and keep playing. It's going to be an adjustment, but my guess is you're in favor of it, just getting the calls right, which I think most of us are.
Yeah, I am. I also, I've made one point that I've gotten some good reaction to, and it was, remember when we had the violations, like when the clock started? There were tons of violations, and people were worried kind of very similarly that it might affect flow. But remember, their teams are going to be more aggressive in exhibition just to find out the lay of the land, all the rules, where they might find advantages. And then they're going to learn, right, and stop being punished. So I think a lot of teams are going to learn that exactly what you said. The umps are a lot better than we think. And if it's borderline, you leave it. And I think they'll be strictly monitoring egregious calls. And those, I think everybody wants corrected, right? Even if it's borderline, I almost feel like if it's missed borderline, I could see if you gave it to the ump because he, you know, he deserves the grace. He's a person.
Sure.
But there are these Angel Hernandez calls that they're absurd. It's absurd. Oh, it's ridiculous. Legitimately absurd. So to clean that up will be a good thing, if anything, for my blood pressure.
And absolutely. And the one thing I've noticed too, just watching spring training, I'm not sure how much you've watched. The high strike, that breaking ball that doesn't quite break. It's not a good pitch. It's not a well-executed pitch. The hitter will take it. It's just kind of like a nothing breaking ball. But by letter of the law, it catches the top of the strike zone. A lot of times that gets called a ball just because it's ugly. It doesn't meet the eye right. Those get reversed a lot. So I wonder if early in the season there will be some value on over-pitcher strikeouts.
Wow, I love that. I mean, funny because doing the work that we do, it's so granular. Generally, that's where we want our hitters attacking anyway. I think you nailed it. I think it's that change of speed or the unexpected delivery from a breaking pitch at that height. Man, I would love to. I would want my, if I was a coach, I would want my hitters aggressive on that anyway. But yeah, I think once guys start getting that reversed, maybe we'll see hitters more aggressive, which I think is good for the game.
John, you are very gracious with your time.
You're the best.
Again, I can't recommend it enough. Let everyone know once again where we can find you. And again, you can shower after, but I appreciate the time and let us all know.
Yes, my wife will be thrilled and bathing for once. All right, John Legheza, LAGHEZZA. Basically, follow me on Twitter, and that'll streamline all the work. I know in this day and age, everybody's promoting and all the subscriptions and stuff. You know, check it out. And if you think it's worth the time, then you sign up. And if not, make sure you're following us during the season, because aside myself, really no one is doing it better than you. Your understanding and your patience with both the variants and people with understanding. I mean, very few people doing it like you, man. Appreciate you.
All right, rate, review, subscribe. That'll do it. We will be back on Monday. Thank you for listening. Thank you to John Legheza. Enjoy the weekend. See you then.